we are doing in Yaakov, and we had left off last time in the Gemara Brachos Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara had been discussing the blessing over learning Torah, and the Gemara had told us Rabbi Yehuda had quoted Shmuel that if one awoke early prior to reading Shema, then he must make a blessing over his learning Torah. If one is going to learn after learning Shema, then we say he has fulfilled his obligations with the second blessing that precedes Shema, the blessing of Ahava Rabbah. And we had discussed that in the blessing of Ahava Rabbah, we say, "V'ten b'libeinu, God, give us within our hearts the will to learn, to teach, to keep, to perform, to sustain the words of the Torah, and teach us the laws of your will." So this is a version, this is the same concept that we say in the blessing on learning Torah. Now here there is a question halachically, how does this work? When we say the blessing of Ahava Rabbah, we are saying this in passing. If one says the blessing of Ahava Rabbah, and he does not have in mind that that blessing should constitute the blessing on learning Torah, does it work? Or does one have to have special intent that this blessing will also be in place of the blessing on learning Torah? We know one, prior to learning Torah, one is supposed to make a blessing. The Gemara just taught us that this blessing can work as a Birkot Torah. The Gemara even presents it as, if you're going to be one of the unusual people who learn prior to this blessing, then you have a special blessing on learning Torah. It seems from the Gemara's terminology, the way the Gemara phrases it, it seems that the default is that the blessing of Ahava Rabbah is the blessing on learning Torah. And a special blessing like we make today is a secondary institution. That's the way the Gemara seems to word it. But the question is, does this blessing of Ahava Rabbah constitute a blessing on learning Torah even without our intent? And this is discussed, it is unclear. We say, l'chatzila, if one wants to be yotzei with the blessing of Ahava Rabbah, one should have in mind that that blessing is in place of the blessing of learning Torah. Another thing is that directly following the blessing, one should learn Torah. If this blessing is going to function as a blessing on learning Torah, then one should follow it up with learning Torah. One cannot follow it up with learning Torah because our sages instituted, it should be said, directly prior to the reading of Shema. So our sages say, well, if you mean for this blessing to be in place of the blessing on learning Torah, then at the first interval that you could learn Torah, you should learn Torah. When is the first interval you could learn Torah? Directly following Shmoneh Esrei. You say Avah Rabbah, Shema, the blessings after Shema, which lead directly into Shmoneh Esrei. So if you have in mind that this blessing should be on Shema, ideally you should learn directly following the Shmoneh Esrei. You finish Shmoneh Esrei, so open up a Chumash and say two Psukim. You learned something. One opinion says that the mere reading of Shema constitutes learning Torah. Shema is also Torah. We say it as a fulfillment of the mitzvah of reading Shema. But nonetheless, these are words of Torah. So one might be able to rely on that as well, that that is the learning Torah directly following the blessing of Ahava Rabbah. Then the Gemara went into a discussion which forms of learning Torah require a blessing prior to learning. And we rule in Halacha that all forms of learning Torah require a blessing. Doesn't matter if you're going to learn Torah, Mishnah, Gemara, Halacha. Before you learn Torah, you should make a blessing on learning Torah. This assumes that you're going to be learning verbally, orally. If one is just going to be reading a book, he's thinking Torah, he isn't mouthing the words of Torah. So then, on the surface, it would seem he does not need to make the blessing on learning Torah. Ideally, we say make the blessing and read some Torah because this isn't agreed on everyone that for just thinking Torah you don't need a blessing. So let's say someone wakes up at 4:30 in the morning. He's going to go down in a half hour. During that half hour, what's he going to do? He's going to learn. So prior to learning, he makes the blessings on learning Torah, and then he starts reading something out loud. After he's read one or two verses out loud, then he could continue learning Torah quietly if he chooses. We discussed that there are different natures of the different blessings of learning Torah. The first blessing we make, Asher Kiddushonu B'Mitzvosa V'Tzivonu, God commanded us to learn Torah. And that blessing, that seems to be a blessing on the mitzvah of learning Torah. then the next blessing seems to be a request. Please make the Torah sweet in our mouths and the mouths of our children. And the third blessing, that seems to be a blessing of praise. Blessed are you, Hashem, who chose us from all the nations and gave us this Torah. Blessed are you, Hashem, who gives the Torah. That's a praise. Thank you. It's a beautiful thing that we have the Torah. So the three different blessings seem to be saying three different things. And there are three different opinions in the Gemara which one should be said. Meaning, we have to make a blessing on learning Torah. We rule halachically to say all three. But it's interesting that in the Gemara there were three different understandings as to what the blessing on learning Torah really should be. Let's continue. On a different occasion, we have to discuss the weight of this blessing at greater length. Because our sages say that the temple was destroyed because they did not bless prior to learning Torah. So the Gemara gives a great weight to this blessing, to the concept of making a blessing on learning Torah. And this concept has great importance. If we say that the temple was destroyed because they didn't bless over their learning, so what's so important about blessing on learning Torah? So on the simple level, the first understanding we could discuss tonight is that one might think that learning Torah is just like studying Greek philosophy. You're reading a book about some kind of religion or some kind of philosophy. So, fine, there's also the Torah. Chazal said no. When we approach Torah, we have to recognize we're approaching the keys to the understanding of the world. We're approaching a book that was a work that was authored by God, the blueprints to the world. And when we approach it, we have to approach it with such respect. This isn't just a work of wisdom that's being read. This isn't a history book. This isn't a story book. This is the work of God. And as such, we make a blessing of appreciation. We make a blessing about the mitzvah. And there's a marked difference between one who comes and studies Torah as some kind of work or one who comes and studies Torah with the proper respect. And that is what the Torah demands of us, that prior to learning Torah, we recognize that we're approaching something that's on a totally different plane and a different ballpark than any other work that we might study. Tanan Hatam. We're continuing the Gemara. The Gemara quotes the following quote. In the temple, so there were different people with different positions of authority. There was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. And then there was the Mimune, the one who was in charge of all the Kohanim who were serving that day. He was also known as the Sgana Kohanim. So, in the beginning of the day, the Sgan, the one in charge, used to tell all the Kohanim, Barechu Beracha Achat, make one blessing, and that is one of the blessings that precedes the Shema. Vehem berchu, and they'd listen to him, and they'd make that blessing. Vekaru aser tadibot, and then they'd read the Ten Commandments. Shema, vehoyim shamoa, vayomer, uvarchu ta'am, and they blessed the nation, berchos kohanim. Then they said, emes v'yatzev, the blessing following Shema. Then they said, avodah, they said, we say avodah, when we say in Shemona Esrei, ritzei Hashem Elokeinu, we're saying, Hashem, we just finished the Shemona Esrei. We're up to the last three blessings. We say, may all our prayer be of will before you, Hashem. May it find favor before you, Hashem. So this was said by the Kohanim after the service in the Beit HaMikdash. They'd say, Hashem, may our sacrifices be a favor for you. Are you cold? So they'd ask, Hashem, please, may our sacrifices find favor before you. So that was the blessing of Ritzei, that was Avodah in the temple. Uberkat Kohanim, and then they'd say the blessing of Kohanim. Ubachutam, they'd make the blessing with the nation. Earlier it wasn't Berch Kohanim, now it's Berch Kohanim. Ushabbat, Mosifim Bracha Chad Mishmar HaYotzeh, and on Shabbos they'd add a blessing of good wishes to the Kohanim that finished their service on that Shabbos. So this is the quote, and now the Gemara is going to analyze it. Amar Mao, we said earlier, V'korin aseret hadibrot, that part of the prayer in the temple was that they recount the Ten Commandments. Amar V'yuda Amar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda quotes in the name of Shmuel, Av Bagvolin Bikshu Likotken. In the outside the temple, the rest of Israel, they also wanted to make such an institution, that every morning, part of prayer, we'd recount the Ten Commandments. Ela shekvar bitlum, but our sages annulled this practice, mipnei tar'omet ha'apikorsim, because they were concerned that there were people who were apostates, and when they see that we say in shul, in synagogue, we say only the Ten Commandments, they'll start telling the common folk, you know why we say the Ten Commandments? Because only the Ten Commandments were said by God. Everything else is additions. So the rabbis were concerned that the common folk would be misled. So the rabbis instituted, you may not publicly say the Ten Commandments as part of prayer. Special institution. You cannot get together in public, in public forum, to just say the Ten Commandments as part of prayer. Tanya Namihachi, we have a Tanai quote to this effect as well. Rabbi Natan Omer, Rabbi Natan Toras, Begvulim Bikshu Likrotken, outside the temple they also wanted to read this way, to read the Ten Commandments publicly every morning. But the rabbis annulled this practice to avoid the taromet, the upheaval that would be caused by the apostates. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana thought to institute such a practice in the great city of Sura. It was one of the great academies. The rabbis already said you can't have such a practice because of the upheaval that would be caused by the apostates. Amemar also had this idea. He wanted to establish this practice in the great academy of Naharda in Babylon. Amale Ravashi, so Ravashi told him, "Kvar bitlum ibnei taromet ha'apikorsim." The rabbis instituted, "We do not do this, not to allow an upheaval by the apostates." Uv Shabbat, the Gemara continued and said, "On the Sabbath, mosifin bracha chad lemishmar ayotze, the Kohanim would add a blessing in which they'd bless the Kohanim that were leaving, that finished their service that weekend. Mar bracha chad, what blessing would they say to the Kohanim that were on their way out?" Amar Rav Chelvo said, "Mishmar ha-yotze omer le-mishmar ha-nichnas." So Rav Chelvo said the group that was exiting would bless the group that was entering. Mishashiken et shmo b'bayit hazeh, the one who made his name rest in this house, hu yashkin b'nechem, he should make rest among you ahava ve'achva, love and brotherliness, the shalom and peace, the re'ut and friendship. So the group that was leaving would bless the group that was entering. May you guys do everything in peace. May things go well between you. That was the blessing that they'd had on the Shabbos. Amar Rabba Bar Chanina Saba Mishmei de Rav. Rabba Bar Chanina, the elder, quoted in the name of Rav, "Kol mi shelo amar amet v'yatziv shachrit v'emet v'emuna arvit, lo yetza yidei chovato." If one has not said the blessing of emet v'yatziv in the morning following Shema, and emet v'emuna in the evening following Shema, he hasn't fulfilled the obligation that the verse teaches us. Sh'ne'emar, the verse teaches us our obligation is la'agid b'boker chasdecha, to recount your kindness in the morning, v'emunatcha b'leilot, and your faith at night. So, in the morning we say emet v'yatziv. What are we saying in emet v'yatziv? We're counting God's kindness. We say God took our forefathers out of Egypt. He split the sea for them. He took them through the sea. At night, what are we saying in emet v'emunah? We're discussing the faith in God. We're discussing the future, that we trust God will keep His promise. We say He'll keep His faith. He'll redeem us from the kings. He'll redeem us from those that afflict us. He'll give us life. He'll let us trample the platforms of the enemies. Everything that we anticipate, our faith in the future, we say at night. And this refers to a concept that goes throughout, that there's the aspect of God's treating us in a way that's revealed. We feel that God's guiding us, and that's referred to as the time of morning, the time of light, when we can recognize that God's guiding us. And then there are the times when the Jewish people are in exile and God's leadership is more hidden, and that's referred to as the nights. And there's a balance. There's babokar in the morning when things are hunky-dory, so we have to show appreciation for the chesed, the kindness that God does for us. And at nights, when things are dark, and we don't see God's hands, and things seem to be overcoming, and things seem to be overwhelming us, so then we have to have faith, we're still going to get there, we will make it. And in essence, we refer to these two concepts in the blessing preceding Shema, us Ashkenazim. In Shema, with the blessing preceding Shema, in the morning we say, Ahava Rabba, a great love God has shown upon the Jewish people. When has God shown a great love? That's when we recognize it, when things seem to be going great. You have King Solomon, the Jewish people are sitting peacefully in the land of Israel, every person is prospering financially, things are going great. That's Ahava Rabba, that's a time of light.
Wait, there were high taxes in Shlomo's time.
There were what?
High taxes.
What is high taxes?
Big taxes. Taxes.
Okay, things were still going well. And then there are times when we don't feel God's love overtly. And for those times, our sages instituted Ahavat Olam. At nights, the blessing that precedes Shema begins with Ahavat Olam. God, you love us in eternal love. Sometimes we merit to have Ahava Rabba, an overwhelming love, where it's revealed. But we have to know that even when we hit times where it's not revealed, things seem to be difficult, there's an underlying eternal love that does not cease. And that is the love that God has for the Jewish people as a whole, the assurance that the Jewish people will remain as a whole. Whether there will be those individually that will suffer, God doesn't promise us that individuals won't suffer. God promises us that the Jewish people, as a people, will continue. And the underlying love that remains with us, even in the times of darkness, that's the Ahavat Olam. And I think that this concept that the Gra says on these two blessings is a concept that couples have to know in their married life as well. There are ups and there are downs, but there has to be an underlying understanding and agreement, a continuum. Just like God says, I'm with you. The house might be destroyed, the temple might be destroyed, we might be waiting for things to look better, and there are rough times, and sometimes we don't feel so good about the way life is running. But we have to know that there's an underlying Ahavat Olam, there's an eternal love that's beneath it all. We have another quote from Rabbi Bar Chinna, the elder in the name of Rav. Hamitpalel, he who is praying, kshu korea, when he bends over, where does he bend over in prayer? Korea bebaruch. When he says baruch, so we bend over. Uchshu zokef, and when he straightens up, zokef bashem. He straightens up when he says God's name. Amar Shmuel, my time at the Rav. Shmuel says, what's the reasoning behind what Rav taught us? Dichtiv, as the verse says, Hashem zokef kefufim. God straightens out those that are bent. Meitive, we have a question on that. The verse says in Malachi, Mipnei Shemi Nichatu, in honor of my name, in facing my name, he's bent over. So it seems to say that when one is going to say God's name, he should be bent. He shouldn't straighten out. So the Gemara says, no. Miktiv Bishmi, the verse doesn't say when he says my name, he's bent over. It says Mipnei Shemi, from the face of my name is what it says. So that's what we do. We bend before we say the name. Now, the simple understanding in the Gemara is that we bow as follows. We stand in prayer, and when we say Baruch, we bow our knees and our stomachs, we bow down. As we will see, the Gemara will continue to describe it. According to the Kabbalah, and this has become the standard practice today, when we say Baruch, we bend our knees. When we say Atah, we straighten our knees and bend our back. But that's not the simple understanding in the Gemara. This, I think, is from the Arizal. This form of bowing that you see people do. They bend the knees, Baruch, straighten the knees, and bend the back, and say, Atah. What Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, used to do, and other great rabbis, if you look closely, do, and that's what the Gemara seems to say, is when they say, Baruch Atah, they bend their knees, they bend their stomach, and they leave their knees bent. So that when they're fully bent, at the end of Atah, it seems like they're very close to the floor. We're going to see that the Gemara is going to quantify how far can we bend. At some point, it's already funny. So let's see, the Gemara will explain it. Right, so that's how most people do it.
Is that like in Arskosu?
Okay. Amar l'Shmuel l'chia barav. So Shmuel said to Chia barav, Bar Uyan, the one who is like us, who teaches like us. Ta, come, ve'imalach, and I'll tell you, milta me'alyita, a great thing, de'amar avuch, that your father said. Hachi amar avuch, this is what your father said. Kshu korea, when he bends, korea be'baruch, he bows in the word baruch. Ukshu zokef, and when he straightens himself out, zokef b'shem, he straightens himself out when he says God's name. Rav Sheshat, the great Rabbi Rav Sheshat, who was blind, kikara, when he used to bow, kara kechizra, he would bow like a stick. When you hit a stick down, it's in one shot, boom. So he'd bow straight down, baruch, and he'd be down. Kizakif, but when he'd straighten out, zakif kechivya, he'd straighten out like a snake. How does a snake straighten out? When a snake goes up, he picks up his head, and the rest of the body goes up, follows it, wiggles itself up. So that's why you'll see some people, in keeping with this instruction, some people say the way you should straighten up is you're bent over. He said, Baruch Ata, and then they pick up their head and they straighten up. It's like a person coming out of the water when they're swimming. You know, someone comes out of the water, the head is going first. So it's very unnatural to do this. It's something you have to get used to. There is a very strong opinion that says that's how you're supposed to straighten out in prayer. That this is what the Gemara was telling us. That when you straighten out like a snake, that the head goes up first. Rabba Bar Chinna, the elder, said in the name of Rab, whoever has the potential to ask for mercy for his friend, and he does not. You know that someone needs a prayer. You know that someone is ill or someone needs a shidduch. Someone needs something that, and we're aware of it and we can pray on behalf of our friend, and we do not. Nikra chote, that person is called a sinner. Shenemar, as the verse says, when Shmuel, Samuel, the great prophet who led the Jewish people, when he's leaving them, and he's telling them, I've appointed a king, I've done my duty, now you guys absolve me, you all agree I've done my part. So he's having this departing message, departing speech from the Jewish people. He tells them, but I want you to know, Gam Anochi, even though I've left you the king, nonetheless I, Chalila li mechatol Hashem, God forbid I should sin before God, mechadol litpalel b'atchem, and cease to pray for you. So we see that Shmuel says, I will not sin and stop praying for you. What is he teaching us in that? That one who ceases to pray for someone who he could pray for, that's called sinning. That's what Shmuel says. I will not sin and cease to pray for you. He's telling the Jewish people, being that I could pray for you, if I wouldn't pray for you, that would be sinning, and I'm not going to do that. From here we derive to any person who could pray for someone else and just disregards it and does not pray for his fellow man, that's called that he's sinning. Amar Rava, Rava added to this point, in Talmid Chachamu, if it's a sage that needs our prayer, Tzarich sheyachle atzmo alav, he has to pray to the point of illness for this fellow man who needs his prayer. My time, the Gemara asks, what's the source for this statement of Rava? King Saul comes to his soldiers and he says, you guys know I'm having it in with my son-in-law. You know that David is trying to rebel against you. And none of you have been caring for me to the extent that they've become sick on my behalf. So he expects them to even get sick on his behalf. Is that the source? That if it's a sage that needs our prayer, we should pray to the extent that it can make a person sick? That's not a proof. Dilma Melech Shani, maybe that's an exception. He was king. Maybe on behalf of a king, you have to go that far to go to the extent of getting sick. Ela mehacha. But what's the source for this? David HaMelech says, these people, I had all these enemies. When they were ill, v'aniv v'chalotam, when they were ill, levushi sak, ineti v'tzom nafshi, I put on sackcloth, I fasted, I did everything on their behalf when they had it dead. When I was in a situation where they could knock me down, what did they do in turn? They tried to knock me down. And he's turning to God and he's saying, God, compare. Don't let Doeg and Achitofel get away with their rebellion against me. These two people, Doeg and Achitofel, whenever they were ill, when they needed something, I'd put on sackcloth, I'd fast, I'd do everything on their behalf. But when it comes to me, they're doing everything to put me down. So that, the Gemara says, is the source, because they weren't kings. And yet, David HaMelech saw these two Tamidei Chachamim, Doeg and Achitofel. They were both great sages. And when they needed something, he went all out in his prayer on their behalf. So, I think we're out of time. We'll pick up next time.